Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I'm going to begin today's show by being a little bit of a philosophical blowhard. Every now and then I have to do this. I just can't help myself. The temptation overwhelms me. But when I do try to sort of delve into the philosophical realm, I at least try to give a warning beforehand so you can brace yourself. So brace yourself here for a moment. Here is my sort of, I guess, armchair philosophy. Today is May the 4th, right? A lot of people know this is like Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. It's kind of where that kind of comes from. I'm a huge Star Wars fan, kind of always been. Many of you are. Some of you not. Some of you it's a little too science fiction-y. But it's a safe bet that the overwhelming majority of people listening right now are either big Star Wars fans or at least aware enough about Star Wars that I can mention it here for a couple of minutes. You know, if you watch the original trilogy, and I grew up on these movies, if you watch the original trilogy of movies back in the 80s, the short synopsis is like Luke Skywalker and the rest of like his sort of rebel friends end up beating Darth Vader, the Emperor, and the Empire and restore sort of freedom to the galaxy. You know, in very simple terms, Luke Skywalker sort of won Star Wars, sort of won the original trilogy. But if you kind of pull back from like the storyline in the movies and look at the larger impact on culture, I would argue that Luke Skywalker was not the winner of Star Wars. Darth Vader was. Let me give you a couple of examples why. You know, and this probably got nothing to do with the fact that, you know, spoiler alert, Darth Vader sort of saved Luke from the Emperor at the end of Episode 6. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about this. So as an adult, many of you are, if I gave you a choice right now, for those of you that know the Star Wars movies, you could sit down for 2 hours and watch one right now. You want to watch Episode 8 that has a lot more of Luke Skywalker, or you want to watch Rogue One that has a little bit more of Darth Vader? Now, I don't know about you, but for me, I like the movie that's got more Darth Vader in it. Vader's sort of a cooler character. And here I am in my 40s, sort of thinking back nostalgically to when I was a part of the original trilogy. I've got an 8-year-old boy as well. My daughter likes Star Wars a little bit. My son loves Star Wars, has loved Star Wars. And when he dresses up like a Star Wars character and runs around the house, he's not pretending to be Luke Skywalker. He's pretending to be Darth Vader. We just sort of like the Empire. We just sort of like the guy, Darth Vader. And this is, to me, not the same thing as, hey, we like to cheer for the bad guy. I don't think that's what it is. I think we're sort of attracted to the success, the power that the Empire kind of brings to the table. And Darth Vader kind of embodies that. I think a similar thing that makes us like Vader is sort of also kind of what makes us like Michael Jordan. You know, a lot of you watching that Last Dance documentary for the Chicago Bulls. I mean, there's a way of looking at this that Jordan's a little bit of a bully, right? I mean, not only does he bully his own teammates, sometimes he sort of bullies the rest of the NBA. And really, The Last Dance, and I love it, it's sort of a retelling of all the ways in which Jordan and the Bulls, all the talent they amassed together, sort of bullied the rest of the NBA. They were kind of the Empire of that time, and yet, in a weird way, we sort of like that. That's what the public kind of likes. We sort of like the Darth Vader style. In fact, watch yourself on social media today and see all the ways in which sort of Star Wars memes get kind of adopted to suit UGA fans. When people sort of put Kirby Smart into a Star Wars costume, they're not making him into Chewbacca. You know, he is Darth Vader. That's kind of what people sort of want Kirby to be, the sort of coolest version of that story, the sort of Darth Vader story. Now, you may be wondering what any of this has to do with Georgia football. So let me see if I can explain it this way. So the public, we, all of us, sort of like Vader. We sort of like that thing. As I said before, I think in a way we kind of like, you know, the Empire. But the rules of storytelling require Luke Skywalker to be the winner. It's almost like, you know, we like Darth Vader, but there's a certain expectation when you go see a movie like this that eventually the good guy is going to win. That's just the way that storytelling kind of works. And when you sort of get into the world of college football, we have our own version of storytellers as well. Many times it's like the national media types. They're the ones who are constructing the narrative that's out there. And much the same way the rules of storytelling dictate, like Luke Skywalker eventually topples the Empire, eventually topples Darth Vader. I think there's an assumption out there on the part part of many in the national media that sort of construct the narrative for college football, that the current empire in the SEC East, Georgia, also must eventually be toppled, and sort of some sort of upstart, plucky underdog is going to be what does that. Now, Florida at one point in time would have been sort of a Darth Vader character in its own right, but it's been kind of a long time since the best of the Gators, so sometimes they get kind of cast in this Luke Skywalker image of the program trying to rise up, build itself up, and eventually topple the empire that Kirby Smart, at least in the SEC East division, has been able to build at Georgia. And as of late, people have kind of grown tired about creating that narrative around Florida, and now that narrative sort of being built around the Tennessee Vols after what I'll admit are some legitimate recruiting wins. And here's what you've got to understand. When it comes to like Georgia rivals and things like this, I really pride myself on not being unfair. Admittedly, I love having a good time being a Gator hater, and admittedly, I love taking pot shots at Dan Mullen, and we sort of lead with our chin on that, and we've never kind of shied away from that. But being the host of this show, trying to entertain you for an hour each day, does not require me to pretend that nothing good ever happens for a program that Georgia fans don't like. Dog fans don't like the Vols, but admittedly, the recruiting success as of late is at least noticeable. Terrence Lewis was a five-star. That's a guy that Tennessee got a commitment from this past week. You know, Georgia wasn't really in on his recruitment very much, but it doesn't change the fact that Lewis is a legit prospect. Georgia also wasn't all that in on the pass rusher out of Alabama, Dylan Brooks, but the Crimson Tide was. The fact that, you know, Tennessee won that recruiting battle is noticeable. Over the weekend, Cody Brown, the running back at Parkview. You know, I think that Georgia's got other running back priorities for the class of 2021, but it's probably fair to say that Brown is at least on Georgia's radar. These are some real recruiting wins for Tennessee and Jeremy Pruitt. I think it proves that Pruitt's ready to be a head coach in the SEC, and that may be the real story throughout all of this. When he was first hired a couple of years ago, the reason why he was so far down the list of potential replacements for Butch Jones is, I think the assumption in Knoxville and many other places in college football was that he just wasn't ready. But Pruitt, by getting the recruiting success he's been able to enjoy, stealing the news cycle a bit during this otherwise kind of barren wasteland of sports news, kind of shows you sort of a with-itness from Jeremy Pruitt, and you got to give him a little bit of credit for that. But once again, as I said before, while we can all sort of acknowledge that and admit that, I think that there is a little bit of a forced narrative on the part of our own storytellers in the college football, you know, national media, that now Tennessee's ready to rise from the ashes, much like, you know, Luke Skywalker would have, you know, way back in the original Star Wars trilogy. And now they're ready to topple big bad Georgia here in the SEC East. And for those of us who've kind of grown tired of seeing the dogs rubber stamped over the last 3 years, now we're going to get a chance to see something brand new. And that's where I say slow down. That's where I say don't get too far ahead of yourself. Don't get too excited about that as of yet. After all, let's pay very close attention to something. A small handful of recruiting wins is not doing anything to change the larger story about what it takes to actually build a championship program. I mean, Georgia's case in point on this entire story. Go back and look at the 2017 class for a minute for Georgia. That was the first truly elite class that Smart had put together, although his 2016 class was probably better than it was given credit for at the time. But the first truly elite class for Georgia under Smart was in 2017. That was the nation's number three class. And yet, of all of the players that Georgia brought in that class, how many true head-to-head wins did Georgia probably have over Alabama? How many players did Georgia sign in that 2017 class that even had committable Alabama offers? Maybe four. You'd probably say Isaiah Wilson. You'd probably say Jake Fromm. You'd probably say D'Angelo Gibbs. You might say Walter Grant. Other than that, a lot of elite players, but Alabama had just different perspective on its own recruiting board, different players that it was chasing down. It's really in the 2018 and 19 and 2020 classes that you started seeing Georgia go head-to-head against Alabama more and then come away with those victories. But Georgia's first elite class was actually put together without stealing too much from Alabama, which sort of brings you back to Tennessee for a moment. Obviously, Tennessee feels pretty good about what it's put together thus far. They've had some real recruiting wins. And in fact, Jeremy Pruitt made an appearance on a Knoxville radio station on Friday. And even though he couldn't sort of mention these recruits by name, you better believe the hosts on the show were happy about what was going on. And obviously, recruiting top of mind for Pruitt. Here's what he said then.
Talk about going into a beautiful weekend here. I know you can't get into specifics, but Coach, it sounds like you've had a pretty good week.
Yeah, it's been a good week. We've actually our kids are taking finals right now and finishing up the semester. We can't really do any football right now, so we're really trying to focus on recruiting and Everybody in our organization is doing a really nice job with that.
And so, yeah, you can't deny that, as I said, Tennessee's gotten some real recruiting wins. But eventually you've got to do more than just recruit a collection of top players. By the way, Tennessee still needs to sign a few of these guys. But you got to do more than that. You've also got to take away players that Georgia really wants. You've got to take away players that Alabama really wants. I would submit that thus far, not all of that much has happened for Tennessee yet in that regard. It just sort of goes to show you that a lot of the mainstream media, the people that cover the games, the national writers, so to speak, I think it just kind of goes to show you sometimes just how little they follow the recruiting process overall, that the presence of a couple four stars or even a five star, the presence of that is not necessarily a game changer, nor does it change the trajectory of how things are going to play out on the field. We just don't know who the quarterback of the future is for Tennessee. We assume it's Harrison Bailey. We haven't seen him with our own eyes yet. This is a Tennessee program that still has to play Oklahoma, Alabama, and Florida before it plays Georgia in November. As I said on our podcast last week, I think one of the real questions for Tennessee is, can it still make the game in November for the first time between the Dogs and Vols matter? Can there be a feeling of the SEC East still being at stake for that game? Can there be some ranked numbers next to both of those teams' names as a top 20 showdown or a top 10 showdown? Those are sort of meager goals that Tennessee probably ought to accomplish first. So on the one hand, I'm not going to tell you that Tennessee hasn't achieved some stuff in recruiting. It's got my attention for doing that. On the other hand, though, I'm not going to tell you that Georgia fans ought to be that worried about it. In fact, the UGA fans I've sort of heard from, they don't feel too worried about this at all. They still think of themselves as the reigning empire in the SEC East. They see Kirby Smart as a little bit like a Darth Vader type figure. And they don't see Jeremy Pruitt as any kind of Luke Skywalker taking him down anytime soon. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia today, and we are really glad to have you with us no matter how you get to us today. And a lot of you watching live on video at 10 a.m. appreciate that. Also, those of you who radio on 960 The Ref podcast, just huge thanks to you for being a part of the program here today. And boy, big thanks to Pella Window and Door of Georgia for making it all possible there as well. They can equip your house with energy efficient windows and doors. That's really important because, let's face it, you know, better doors, better windows, that can increase the curb appeal of your home, which means if you go to resell your home, in some cases, you can get more money for your home because of how it looks on the outside. Also, on the inside of your home, especially this time of year when the air conditioning is going to be running nonstop here pretty soon, better windows, better doors also keeps that energy inside your house, keeps it from sort of escaping out through the crevices in your windows and doors, which could save you money on your bills. All the more reasons why it's probably time for you to think about upgrading your windows and doors, and Pella Window and Door of Georgia gives you a chance to do that. Also, during these weird times we're dealing with because of the coronavirus, Pella Window and Door stepping up to make a lot of this process of speaking to them about installations and everything else much, much easier. A couple different ways to get in touch, PellaBranch.com, or give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom, 404-445-2979. Let me give you the number again, 404-445-2979. The website, as I said, PellaBranch.com. You can do video meetings. You can do lots of contactless communication with the folks over there, so you can maintain your own degree of social distancing while also learning how you can get better windows and doors for your home. By the way, speaking of great offer, how about through June 4th, 50% off qualifying installations or 0% financing for 48 months. It's Pella Window and Door of Georgia. They are viewed to be the best. All right, coming up here in just a moment, I'm going to talk to John Stinchcomb about some of this kind of stuff and kind of what he thinks about Tennessee and what they're building there. You know, we'll come back again to, I guess, the point we've made before, which is ultimately this may be more interesting and more something that Florida ought to be paying close attention to than Georgia. But nonetheless, you know, one of the stories of the weekend was some of the recruiting success that Tennessee enjoyed. So we'll talk to John about that some here coming up in just a moment. I also want to get some thoughts from John on the subject of the Georgia offensive line. We spent some time talking about that last week in terms of what you should expect with Andrew Thomas and Isaiah Wilson gone, with big leadership role coming up for Jamari Salyer, bigger leadership role, you think, for Ben Cleveland, probably feel like for Trey Hill, for those guys. You know, what's the expectation for this group? Should it still be considered one of UGA's strengths for the upcoming season? John's got some interesting things to say about that. We will let him do that. Then after that, we'll do our the rest of the show, including some interesting news around the SEC, including one quarterback in the SEC West who thinks that his program might be about ready to do a very similar run to what LSU put together last season. So we'll tell you about that and tell you why the Georgia-Virginia game, assuming that it's played to begin the season, may have a little bit different look upcoming this season than you would have initially expected it to. We'll do all that here coming up. It's Dog Nation Daily presented by Pella Window and Door. Now let's talk to John Stinchcomb as a part of a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. And, of course, it's great to have all of you with us as well.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Let's get ready to say hello to John Stinchcomb here today as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. There's a lot I want to talk to John about, but let me begin, though, with, I guess, the topic at hand. So Tennessee, John, goes out and gets a nice collection of recruiting wins, and a lot of these guys are, like, legit players. Like Cody Brown, running back from Parkview, is a real player. He's been on Georgia's radar. That's a real running back. Terrence Lewis is a five-star linebacker, and despite the fact that he wasn't really recruited that much by Georgia, still a legit prospect. When you go out and get a guy like Dylan Brooks out of Alabama, that's a guy the Crimson Tide wanted. So there have been some legitimate recruiting wins for Tennessee throughout this process. But the notion that Tennessee's now going to leapfrog Florida and be, as some people have been trying to make Florida be for the last couple of years, a legit threat to Georgia, I'm not quite ready to go there yet. I'll give Tennessee a little bit of credit. But in terms of saying, oh, my gosh, now UGA fans ought to be quaking in their boots, that's just not really what I see coming from Jeremy Pruitt in Tennessee at the moment.
I'm right there with you. I think it's good. You know, you look at the top three in the East, it's usually Georgia, Florida, and Tennessee. And I think we've been spoiled because for the past few years, Tennessee hadn't really been in that conversation. I think Coach Pruitt's a great recruiter. I think he's able to connect with kids. He was able to do it when he was in Athens. So to see him have some success on the recruiting trail shouldn't be surprising to any one of us. They're still not, in my mind, they don't have the caliber team that Georgia does or frankly, Florida does at this point. They're getting back in the discussion with players like Cody Brown. As a former Parkview grad, I'm excited for him. You watch him. It reminds me a little bit of the Jamal Lewis days. I mean, that powerful running. He's got a thick lower body and is able to grind through a lot of tackles. But to see Tennessee have the success, it's not surprising. Are they on Georgia's level yet? Not even close in my mind.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we discount is the number of recruiting wins it takes to put yourself in the conversation with elite programs in college football. And unfortunately, Georgia fans know this full well. Georgia over the last 4 years has had the number three class, the number one class, the number two class, the number one class, and arguably it's still not the most talented team in the country. That may still be Alabama. Ohio State's up there, and when it comes to elite top-end players, you obviously got to pay close attention to Clemson as well, even though the fullness of the roster doesn't necessarily round out that way. The point here is Georgia's been stacking five stars on top of each other for multiple years, and that's still not necessarily enough to make you the most talented team in the country. And for me, John, that's always going to be the thing that the national media that doesn't follow recruiting quite as closely as we do here around Dog Nation, that's always going to be the thing they misunderstand. And sort of the vast wasteland of sports that we're in right now, getting a five-star for a program like Tennessee gets you a lot of attention. But for the people who don't just follow this when there's no other sports to follow, people who follow recruiting 365 days a year, they'll tell you, man, if you really want to be up there with the elite talent teams of the country, which Georgia is kind of now a part of, it's going to take a whole lot more than a small handful of recruiting wins to get that done for you.
I agree. I also think there's a war of attrition here because you look at some of our recruiting classes that have been ranked high nationally. We've lost some of those players. Justin Fields comes to mind. Cade Mays comes to mind. The NFL draft comes to mind with some of your underclassmen declaring themselves eligible. So you have to keep the cupboards full, if you will. And that's a tough thing to do because a lot of these high-end four-star guys, five-star guys, they want to have an immediate impact on their team. And Georgia has seen that if they don't get that immediate gratification, they can go elsewhere and find it, you know, and that's part of the war that you're fighting.
It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with John Stinchcomb. Let me move on and talk about something different for a moment. I wrote about this yesterday at DogNation.com, and I really talked about this in our show a couple of times recently. Here's a belief that I have for the upcoming season, that if Todd Monken is as good as an offensive coordinator as I think he can be, the impact won't just be felt by Jamie Newman, the guy that I assume starts a quarterback. I think the impact is felt by Georgia running backs as well. And the example that I've cited on this is what happened at LSU a season ago, and I'm fascinated by this. that not only did Joe Burrow go from like 16 touchdowns, six interceptions to like 60 touchdowns in 2019, but Clyde Edwards-Hilaire went from a sort of backup running back with about, well, I forget the exact number, 700 yards rushing, to all of a sudden last year he's rushing for more than 1,400 yards. Every single number across the board went way up for him. Joe Brady was the passing game coordinator for LSU, and yet Clyde Edwards-Hilaire thrived in an offense that Joe Brady was a part of. John, I believe there's a correlation here for Georgia as well. Very quietly last season, the Georgia running game was not as effective as it had been in previous years, and I think we all know the reason why. The inability of Georgia to counterpunch when teams set up to stop the run made stopping the run easier for opposing defenses last year. If Georgia finds a way to be more explosive vertically with the passing game, involve the side-to-side stuff there as well in terms of spreading out defenses, I think some of the biggest beneficiaries of that on the Georgia roster, John, could be Georgia running backs. What do you think about that?
Couldn't agree with you more. I think Andre Swift would have loved to have seen this past season a vertical attack, an aerial assault on the defense, so they couldn't jam the box with 8-9 minute times. I mean, those safeties, sometimes they were just playing like extra linebackers because there wasn't a threat of the passing game, and that hurts. I mean, you look at some of the most proficient, prolific offenses at any level, collegiate or professional, and they're able to attack in all sorts of ways. It's not just one-dimensional offense. And who can benefit the most? I think the running backs benefit when you have the ability to threaten a defense with your aerial assault. And last year, Georgia didn't have it. I think Monken is a guy who can recognize the opportunities and create opportunities, but it comes with balance. You got to have the balance to keep a defense honest. Otherwise, they'll make you one-dimensional.
I want to play devil's advocate. It's my own opinion here coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, we'll remind you that John Stinchcomb with us, a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. You know, social distancing, which we're all a part of right now, can still be delicious. Marlowe's Tavern gives you a chance to do that with those great to-go orders. They've always had a dedicated portion of their business for to-go orders anyway, and that's become even more important, obviously, during the coronavirus shutdown that we've been a part of here. What that means is, and I've experienced this firsthand, the Marlowe's Tavern right here in my neighborhood, just up the road from me, I drive in there. You go into the patio area. It has been kind of partitioned off of the to-go orders. It's totally contactless. You just scoop your food up. You kind of walk right out there. They'll even bring it to your car if you want to. If you go to marlowestavern.com, you can find out the tavern in your neighborhood. Give them a call, place your order. Picking it up is very easy. Also, I think there's a very real-world concern out there right now for a lot of these kids who are not in school at the moment. You know, for a lot of kids, the school lunch, that's like their main source of nutrition. And with the absence of school, for some kids, unfortunately, means the absence of nutrition. That's why Marlowe's Tavern has stepped up in such a big way to support No Kid Hungry. And right now, for every gift card you purchase, and this is a great time to purchase gift cards, not just for yourself to support the restaurants you love, but also give, the name would suggest, as a gift card to people on the front lines battling the coronavirus or anything else. Certainly, Marlowe's Tavern, a great way to do that. And for now, for every gift card you purchase, Marlowe's is also going to donate 20% of that purchase price to No Kid Hungry, which is an organization set up to sort of teach parents how to cook healthy meals for their kids, also provide nutrition for kids who need it most. No Kid Hungry doing great work, Marlowe's Tavern doing great work to support them. You can find out more about this by going to a website. It's an email address, info@marlowestavern.com. That's info@marlowestavern.com. All right, John, let me play devil's advocate about my own point of view here for a moment, because for the most part, I welcome what I believe should be an offensive change for Georgia this year, led by the new coordinator, Todd Monken. However, admittedly, I hope that Georgia's transition on this looks like LSU's, where there was still a great opportunity for the running back, Edwards-Hilaire, a season ago. Admittedly, though, Alabama, who's also undergone a bit of a transformation the last couple of years, seems to have traded some of its physicality for its explosiveness on offense. You know, you've had quarterback play there unrivaled by any point in time in Alabama history. You've had the best collection of wide receivers I may have ever seen on any one team at one time. And I'll say that about Alabama, even more so than LSU, the reigning national champion. Yet there has been seemingly a loss of that Alabama edge on defense, which it's always had under the Nick Saban era, and that ability to really run the ball when you need to. I didn't see that as much from Alabama last season, as I've kind of grown used to seeing that. So, John, I guess as a former offensive lineman, my question for you would be, how does Georgia evolve offensively to look a little bit more like Alabama and a lot more like LSU without giving up the physicality, which for this program under Kirby Smart has been a bit of a trademark?
Well, I think offenses have evolved, and that's probably the best term to use, that, you know, it's cyclical, but you look at the way the offenses today, collegiately or professionally, NFL teams are starting to adopt a lot of what you see in college football right now. And it's just, you're trying to create opportunities. And to do that, sometimes you're going to have to stretch the field horizontally, if you will, and attack in different spaces. That's going to take away some of the physicality. When you heard Coach Pittman for the past however many years talk about these massive offensive linemen, that's a picture of kind of the old school Alabama front that you saw, these 340, 350-pound guys between the tight ends, pound the ball, you know, power running game, tight inside zone plays. You don't see that as much anymore. You see three wide receiver sets, four wide receiver sets, single back in the backfield opportunities. That spaces the defense out, and you're going to have to create some of those spaces. So I think it's probably a little unrealistic to still keep that same level of physicality of the old school SEC. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think you can still run the ball and not consider it finesse. No offensive lineman wants to be considered a finesse offense, but you don't have to be the old school eye back, single tight end, power eye, you know, dive followed by power over and over again. That's not the way football's played anymore.
So let me transition to the offensive line. You mentioned that last week. We spent a good bit of time on this show talking about the offensive line. My working theory here is, over the course of the last 3 years especially, I have seen good enough play from the Georgia offensive line to assume that the offensive line will still be good enough in 2020. Greatest of all time, the way that previous offensive lines for Georgia have kind of gotten hyped? Probably not. Losing Andrew Thomas, Isaiah Wilson certainly hurts. The transition away from Sam Pittman, you've at least got to pay some credence to that as a storyline for this team. But I like Matt Luke. I believe in Jamari Salyer and Ben Cleveland and Trey Hill, the guys that I assume are the anchors for this year's offensive line. I sort of feel that the offensive line for Georgia will at the very least be fine. Not everybody agrees with that. Some people have cited the offensive line as a reason why the Georgia might falter this season. John, where do you kind of come down on this? I mean, obviously, I know you've got respect for Luke. You've said that a million times. I know you like some of the players who are still here. But I guess my point is, does Georgia establish enough of a track record over the last 3 years to assume that the transition this season can be managed?
Let me start by saying I don't think this offensive line is going to be a weakness. I think you look at other teams across, let's just stay in our conference in the SEC, and the talent level that Georgia has returning is superior to, I'd argue maybe two teams that might have a better front five, at least on paper, than what Georgia brings back. So I'm sure there's a number of schools, not just the SEC, but across the country, that would love to have what Georgia has in spite of losing Solomon Kinley, Isaiah Wilson, and Andrew Thomas. I mean, the talent level is still superior to most teams. So what are you comparing it to? Are you comparing it to last year's team? That's going to be tough to beat. You got two first rounders and you know, a fourth round draft pick that just left the squad. I understand that, but Georgia's got a good group of guys returning. I think what can help them most is a great scheme, and hopefully Munkin's the guy. I mean, there's a lot of optimism surrounding him that he comes in and makes everyone better, and you create the right opportunities. And you might not have to have two first-round tackles to still be a very efficient top-level, top-five offense in the SEC.
That's exactly right. One of the things I've said about this in the past, John, is at Georgia right now, the fact that a guy hasn't played should not be determined as some sort of indictment against him. The fact that you're not playing doesn't mean that you can't play. So for guys like Warren McClendon and Xavier Trump, all right, well, so we're back up here. John, I don't know how much of your last answer we didn't get, so let me just give you a point to pick up on. We'll let you come in. You kind of compared what the offensive line situation in Georgia now is, going back to the time when your brother Matt and Chris Terry and guys like that were at Georgia, when there was also some depth at those tackles positions. Why don't you pick up there from that point? We'll get ready to wrap up with the year as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
Well, I would just say this. I think Georgia is better suited now than they ever have been to replace top-notch talent. I mean, Georgia has been able to put out first-round talent for years now. I mean, Isaiah Wynn, go back to the mid-90s when you had my brother Matt and Chris Terry, the year that George Foster and I were drafted. I mean, there's always been when you have top-level guys, you're going to have to be able to replace them. And I think Georgia's in a situation now where we're more – because of the depth and the recruiting that's occurred over the past 3-4 years, we're better situated for this to occur.
John, let me ask you one question on the way out the door here. And I am the last thing I'm asking you to do is for weigh into any kind of controversy, because we steer clear of that around this program. But you're also a pretty big stakeholder of the University of Georgia in addition to being a graduate. Do you get the sense that we're on track for football here? Certainly, I've heard some good things coming out of the university president as of late, athletic director Greg McGarity, SEC commissioner Greg Sankey, a lot of hopeful words there. Does it feel like we're moving in the right direction to be playing some football in the fall from where you sit as someone who's intimately involved in the inner workings of the University of Georgia?
I think we're all hopeful. I think across the board, we all want it to happen. I just think there's so much uncertainty right now that no one can speak with any degree of sincerity or certainty that this is going to happen. There's still so many chips to fall in place before that happens. You don't want to put anyone at risk, the fans at risk or the players. I mean, if it's been declared publicly that if the school's not back on campus, then we're not going to put our student athletes at risk. So right now, it's all speculation. I think the best word that's being thrown around is hope. I think we're all hopeful at every level that we have sports, but football is a face-to-face, sweaty mess of a contest where you don't have that separation. And if that puts students in peril that happen to be athletes, that might not be a risk that people are willing to take. So there's got to be safeguards in place, not just for fans, but the players alike. And right now, we just don't have those answers. So I think we're hopeful. I think everybody is wanting the football season to occur. We just don't know what that looks like yet.
Yeah, John, I think that's well said and a pretty good survey of the situation at the moment. Thanks for being here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update today. We appreciate your insight on all things related to UGA. We'll look forward to catching up with you again soon there as well.
Always enjoy it. Go Dogs. Stay safe.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Fun to be able to catch up with John Stinchcomb there, and fun now to be able to talk about the SEC as part of our SEC Through here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. Before we get to that, though, let me also remind you to make sure you check out the video live at 10 a.m. every single morning. A little bit of fun on there, taking some comments, chatting up some UGA. Of course, we do that as a part of our R.S. Andrews Cool Down. You know, air conditioning, heating, plumbing, electric, all of those are the things that Dog Nation trusts R.S. Andrews to do for it. And you can trust R.S. Andrews on that front for you there as well. Dari and the whole team over there, they do great work. This is a time of year where we're heading into a season of air conditionings being on. It's hot. So, you know, warm this weekend, going to be hot. We're heading towards summer, which is good news for a lot of reasons. But, of course, it's also a reminder that your air conditioning unit is going to be working overdrive. Do you trust yours to make it through the warm weather season to come? Well, best way to get some peace of mind on that is with R.S. Andrews and their tune-up for your air conditioning unit that can get your system back to factory-fresh specs. Find them online, rsandrews.com. All right, let me hit a few of these SEC through stories, and some of these, I guess, are not necessarily 100% related to the SEC, kind of, you know, closely tied to Georgia. At least in one instance here, there was something that I'd been meaning to mention for a couple days and just kind of had not gotten around to. I guess let me begin with this. This is not SEC related, but it is somewhat UGA related. Did you see where Keaton Thompson, the former Mississippi State quarterback, has announced his intentions to transfer to Virginia? Thompson will be immediately eligible. Have 2 years remaining. I think it's 2 years remaining. And this is a big pickup for Virginia. They needed a quarterback badly. They were led, you know, mightily a year ago at the quarterback position, big time production, and looking to figure out how to replace that. Thompson becomes a candidate to do so. Obviously, he'd kind of fallen out of favor there in Starkville. This is probably even before the arrival of Mike Leach as coach. But Thompson to Virginia all of a sudden becomes a factor for, assuming that Georgia plays Virginia to open the season. We'll keep our fingers crossed the game even takes place. But if it does happen, a little bit of a new look for Virginia quarterback, the arrival of Thompson from Mississippi State. You assume that he'll step in there with the Cavaliers as a chance to be the starter. By the way, speaking of Mississippi State, so Mike Leach was interviewed by Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. This is sort of the classic example I've told you before. I've made it clear many times, I think that Leach is going to be unsuccessful in the SEC, but it's amazing to me what a darling of the media that Leach continues to be. Interviewed by Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. The disclaimer in the interview, if you go to the website to see it, is that it was conducted before the weird noose tweet that caused a huge controversy in Starkville that ultimately led to at least one player transferring. Multiple players have transferred from Mississippi State, but only one has cited the controversial tweet as the reason why he left Starkville. And I guess here's my point. Listen, you know, I'm not trying to be, you know, watchdog media. I don't care anything about that. But doesn't it stand to reason that any interview that you'd been saving to run with Mike Leach that took place before this, maybe you shouldn't run the interview if you're not dealing with the most important issue at hand for Leach? The fact that he's holed up at Key West, you know, living on the beach away from the state of Mississippi here while, you know, controversy brewed, completely unforced error on the basis of a Leach tweet here. Seems weird to me that you even run the interview if you can't get some sort of comment on the record about what happened with the tweet. But nonetheless, man, this media loves Mike Leach, the mercurial figure. They have a good time with him. They're entertained by him. And I guess they expect that you will be there as well. Here's a story that I've been meaning to get to and just hadn't got to as of yet. And this is, you know, unfortunately bad news. Jaden Hazelwood has reportedly torn his ACL. And this has been out there for a while. We just haven't talked about it. Obviously, Hazelwood was at one point in time, his Georgia commit. And then for a while, was connected to Georgia before ultimately choosing Oklahoma. And admittedly, Hazelwood's a little bit of a controversial figure on the basis of how he left UGA and kind of what he seemed to insinuate about Georgia on his way out the door. But listen, I'm not going to, you know, say anything other than the obvious truth here. You hate it for a young man like this that, I mean, I guess now his entire season for the upcoming season's called into question, and it could have been a big year for him in Oklahoma. With the departure of CeeDee Lamb, you know, it looks sort of like Jaden Hazelwood was in line to be that next guy there. This is a big loss to the Sooners offense probably all the way around in making the transition to Spencer Rattler at quarterback. You know, Rattler, I'm sure, was going to depend on a guy like Hazelwood, the former five-star who'd been in the program and gained some experience a year ago. So this is a big loss for Oklahoma on the field and really a disappointing thing for Hazelwood, who's a player that admittedly I was very entertained by as a high school guy and was looking forward to seeing more of him this upcoming season. But that apparently is not going to take place, at least on the basis of the reports about this injury for Hazelwood there at Oklahoma. A couple other stories to get to here for a moment. I saw where Missouri-Kansas is on its way back to a renewed rivalry. I think that's good news. You know, a lot of the conference realignment that happened a few years ago put a lot of these rivalries on ice. Missouri-Kansas, Texas, Texas A&M. The fact that the cooler heads seemingly prevailing here with these two programs, you know, you almost wish that A&M and Texas would either play or stop talking about it. There's such a passive-aggressive nature to the way that those two programs relate to each other and, you know, each side sort of pretending they're too strong as a program to have to give in and play the other side. It's kind of ridiculous. It's very silly. Missouri and Kansas, probably some hurt feelings as well initially when Missouri left the Big 12 to come to the SEC, but they're able to kind of put that behind them at least long enough to get together and play here coming up in a couple of years. So it's kind of a nice thing to see. This is a traditional rivalry that a lot of folks here in Georgia may not just know very much about. It probably doesn't penetrate all regions of the country equally, but they very much view each other as hated rivals, and I guess now they're going to be getting back on the field again to play here very soon. I saw where Gus Malzahn, the Auburn coach, was interviewed somewhere and talked about Jared Stidham, who Stidham's right now would appear to be on his way to being starting quarterback for the New England Patriots unless something changes. Patriots did not get Andy Dalton. Dalton signed with the Dallas Cowboys upon, you know, leaving his, you know, previous team, the Cincinnati Bengals. Patriots also made no move for quarterback in the draft. So now at this point in time, we are looking at a scenario where Gus Malzahn appears to be the replacement for Tom Brady. I'm sorry, not Gus Malzahn. Jared Stidham appears to be the replacement for Tom Brady unless something changes there. And Malzahn was quoted saying he wished him well and expects big things from him. He thinks he's ready for that spot there and kind of touted some of the work that he did while he was at Auburn. And I guess it's kind of funny how the storyline for Stidham kind of takes a bit of a twist here, because I think most people would probably say that the career of Stidham at Auburn probably ends up being a little bit of a disappointment given the accolades and the expectations that he had when he initially transferred to the program from Baylor. I mean, this was a guy that, you know, was kind of thought to be a really big-time quarterback, and he had some nice moments. He played well, certainly, in the win against Georgia in 2017, was part of a victory against Alabama there a couple of weeks after that. But for the most part,
there just wasn't a lot to the Stidham era at Auburn other than that one win of the SEC West, and they got drilled by Georgia in the SEC championship game, you know, that season. So, you know, Stidham leaves Auburn as kind of a disappointment, but now has a chance to completely recast himself now as not just a starting quarterback in the NFL, but the replacement for Tom Brady for the New England Patriots. Eventually, I think that New England's got a different idea in mind for what it wants to do quarterback-wise. But for now, Stidham's got his opportunity, and you certainly can't say much about that. Speaking of quarterbacks in the SEC West, Stidham used to be one of those. One of the guys who still is one is Kellen Mond at Texas A&M. And Mond has said something interesting over the weekend, really believing that his team can be the 2020 version of what LSU was a year ago. Obviously, there's some aspects of the story that seem similar. They're both in the SEC West. Mond, much like Burrow, has experience now as a starting quarterback and hopes to build on that the way that Joe Burrow did a year ago. But ultimately, even though I think that A&M is actually a pretty good team this year, I've picked them to go maybe even as much as 11-1. Not my pick to win the SEC West. I'll take Alabama to do that. But I do have pretty high expectations for A&M all the way around. I don't see them as very similar to LSU in this regard. LSU was a physical team that needed to add the extra dimension on offense, similar to Georgia in some respects. A&M to me is the exact opposite. We know that Jimbo Fisher is a good offensive coach. We know that Jimbo Fisher can coach the passing game. He's not necessarily a spread-style passing game type guy, but he's developed plenty of quarterbacks. We know they're capable of doing that. But the one thing that Jimbo Fisher has wrestled with since becoming Texas A&M coach is instilling the necessary toughness to win in the SEC. You know, Kevin Sumlin's just kind of a finesse-style coach. Texas A&M, late of the Big 12, has felt very much like a Big 12-style team in the SEC, dating back to their arrival in this SEC in 2012. And that's just been kind of hard to get out of the program. There's a little bit of a stench associated with the Big 12 in my mind. Teams that just don't play physical, teams that value offense over defense. Kevin Sumlin had a lot of that. He works west of the Mississippi. I don't think he necessarily works in the SEC. I'm sure he'll be fine at Arizona, for instance. But that just doesn't really work in the SEC. Jimbo Fisher, even though he's kind of an offensive-minded guy, quarterback tutor, is kind of cut from the same cloth, similar to what Kirby Smart's cut from as a coach. He's trying to establish that physicality. And so, ultimately, the chance of Texas A&M being successful is not similar to LSU, which was trying to find the offensive wrinkles. A&M's got the offensive wrinkles, but can they run the football? Can they play enough defense? Those are the questions that I think hang over the head of College Station right now to determine how good the Aggies can be this upcoming year. And we'll make that your SEC through. Let me just say one more thing about the topic we started the show with in terms of what's happened at Tennessee as of late, the recruiting success they've enjoyed. You know, Vols fans will take this probably a step too far. As I said before, I think you have to give some legitimate credit for some legitimate recruiting wins. They've dominated the news cycle over the course of the last few days, totally devoid of sports otherwise. It's probably pretty smart that Jeremy Pruitt found a way to sort of step into that gap and get some attention for his program. It's well executed on his part. But Tennessee fans now want to sort of take that next step and saying, well, you know, now that my program's gotten Terrence Lewis, and now that my program's gotten DeShawn Rucker and, you know, Dylan Brooks, whoever else, now we're coming for the other big boys. Now we're coming for the players that Georgia wants. We're coming for guys like Amarius Mims. Mims has tweeted about Tennessee. Mims and Cody Brown are thought to be good friends. But that's where I say hit the brakes, pal. Just because you get some recruits somewhere doesn't mean you're getting the ones that Georgia really wants, Amarius Mims included. I think he's probably all dog. Gator Hater Updater, by the way, 1,283 days. We'll see you tomorrow here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door.